Good afternoon, everybody, or good evening, or good morning, whatever the case may be, wherever you're listening around the world. This is Sports Betting Tips with Chris Sheridan, and I'm joined by a guy I've been working with for about 122 years. His name is Sam Smith. He works for Bulls.com, and he worked for, I believe it was 76 years at the Chicago Tribune. And Sam, you're supposed to be
exactly
laughing at this stuff. And Sam joins us today from Indianapolis, where the Chicago Bulls will be playing their first game tonight under new coach Jim Boylan against the Pacers tonight at 7. And Sam, you know, big news in Chicago. The last link to Jerry Krause perhaps is gone, and Fred Hoiberg was dismissed yesterday, and the Bulls promoted Jim Boylan, the associate head coach. Give us your take on it. Did this come out of the blue, or did you see this one coming?
Well, yeah, good to talk to you, Chris, always. And I know your listeners should know about that that great drive you hit on the 240-yard par 3 in Puerto Rico that time.
Yes, and then I
almost hold it.
Yeah, I almost hold it, and I three-putted. And I three-putted.
Unfortunately, this was probably common for a lot of factors. Life is not fair, and certainly coaching in the NBA is not, or any, you know, we saw the Packers coach, you know, after his great run of success, recently fired, and I don't know how much, you know, people pay attention, but the Blackhawks, you know, resurrected, won 3 titles, and, you know, had a bad season or and a half, and the coach got fired at the beginning of this season. So, you know, I know the Bulls talked about a lot of other factors, and I'm sure there were, you know, many, but it's just too hard to survive losing no matter the circumstances. And the Bulls under Hoiberg had some incredible circumstances culminating this season with, you know, essentially 4 of the top 7 players not playing this season, you know, with, with a rebuilding team. So, you know, it's hard to it's obviously hard to win in those circumstances, but you know, you're in a major market, team is not doing well, fans are you know, demanding some something, and so as we see in sports and basketball all the time, you know, a coach takes the fall for that kind of thing, and so, you know, on that level we could see that coming, that it was going to be hard for Fred to survive this season. The notion was, well, he'll make it through the season and get fired. And I think, you know, sort of management got to the point, well, if we're going to fire him at the end of the season, and let's take a look at this guy, you know, Jim Boylan, to see if he could be our future coach. And so I think they just decided to do it sooner than later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the injuries you referred to, Lauri Markkanen just came back. He missed 23 games with an elbow, and he's moving into the starting lineup. And Jabari Parker's going to come off the bench, which is going to be interesting. They got kind of a logjam there, you know, with Bobby Portis as well. Denzel Washington, he's out all season with an ankle injury. Portis has only played 4 games, and Chris Dunn has only played in 1 game. You know, they're all due back soon, but is that fair to Fred Hoiberg to cut him loose when he's missing, you know, 4 of the team's top players?
And of course it's not fair, but it, you know, wasn't fair when a lot of our colleagues got run out of the newspaper business because things were not going well, and it's not you know, there's lack of equities in all professions all the time. I always have been a supporter of Fred. You know, I believed under the circumstances he tried to do the best he could. And he got Fred got a lot of second guessing kind of in Chicago because he isn't the profile. Now, you know, a lot of it is because of lack of success, but he isn't the profile of what a lot of people like in a coach, and especially in Chicago, you know, which is a football kind of city. You know, they want this, you know, a Ditka kind of lunatic, somebody screaming at the players and jumping up on the sidelines. And that's not Fred's personality. And so, you know, his personality didn't fit the community a lot. But, you know, they had Thibodeau, who is that personality. And then they ended up firing, and you know how it goes. Usually when you get rid of the guy who's, you know, jumping up and down and erratic and angry, you say, well, the player's, you know, worn out by that. We got to get somebody who's, you know, player friendly and good, you know. So then you get that guy, and if things don't work out, you say, well, he's not, you know, he's not tough enough. And so we see that.
Then you go back to a hard ass.
With every team, I mean, it's almost cliche, and you know. So as a result, you know, Fred became victim of that. No, of course it wasn't fair. You know, Lauri Markkanen just came back. You know, Denzel Valentine goes out, and he was a reserve guy, goes out for the season. Chris Dunn is supposed to be your starting point guard. He doesn't play at all. Portis was your sixth man, but it was going to be starter. And you end up, you know, basically starting a rookie, you know, 19-year-old at center with a free agent. You know, Bryce Parker comes in as a free agent, you know, who was hardly in any great demand in the summer. Signed a one-year contract, basically, with the Bulls. Got a second year, but it's not guaranteed. So, and this is an incredible series of injuries to lose, you know, four, you know, top seven guys. And Markkanen was supposed to be your star player coming into the season, even though Zach LaVine's done great and, you know, really has been a starring type player. You know, but that should have reflected positively on Fred, that, you know, Zach LaVine's having his career year coming in. But like I said, it's just hard to survive, you know, the lack of success in the wins and losses. And, you know, that, I mean, that's just what sports is about. You are, you build Parcells, you are who your record is. And if your record is losing, you're a loser, and usually somebody gets in line to replace you.
Yeah, the Bulls were 115 and 155 in Fred's 3+ seasons. And let's go back to the roster, because you talked about Jabari Parker. He signed for $20 million with a team option for next year for $20 million. If that's not picked up, the Bulls have just about as much cap space as anybody. Right now, if you include Parker, they're only at $53 million for next year. So you're talking about somewhere in the area of $55 to $58 million in cap room coming up for the next season. And Zach LaVine is obviously, he's having just a tremendous year. He's one of the rare players who gets paid and then performs up to his new contract. A lot of guys, they don't play as well after they sign the big deal as they did before. But where's the hope for the Bulls fans for next season? Is there enough there, and is there enough allure of playing in Chicago for a couple of top guys? And you know, Sam, more than half the league's going to be free agents next year. Guys going to want to come play there?
No, absolutely. I mean, Chicago's a major market. You know, it's one of the. I mean, the weather's not that great. And so, you know, if you want good weather, and you know, you can go to L.A. and Phoenix and Miami and whatever, all those kind of things. But, you know, it's a major sports market. It's a great sports town. It's a great city, you know. And the truth is, the team is well positioned. I mean, the trade, you know, they made for Jimmy Butler was the right trade. You know, they got Markkanen as a potential, looks like a star type player. They got LaVine, looks like a star type player. And Chris Dunn, you know, we don't know yet fully because he was injured a lot last year, too, and then gets injured again. And obviously that's, you know, he's got to get healthy. But, you know, he was a number five overall pick in the draft and, you know, a defensive-oriented kind of guy. And then now just got Carter, you know, Wendell Carter in the draft, who looks like he's going to be a solid NBA player. And so they should have been, you know, if not for the injuries going into the season with the addition of Parker, who's, you know, had the two ACLs, but, you know, former number two pick in the draft who has come back and is scoring well. And I don't know, he's averaging 16, 17 points. I think in the five of his last seven games, he's gotten double doubles. He's averaging over his last couple of weeks, 20 or 21, something like that. He's a real natural scorer. He's not a complete player. So there's a lot there. If they weren't injured, they certainly would have been at least a 500 team at this point. I mean, if you look at their record, they've lost four or five games at the buzzer. They lost, I think, two by a point, two by 2 points, one on a three at the end. You know, I think they lead the league in most games decided by 3 points or less. So if they're not missing four of their top seven players, you know, they're gonna be a surprise team. So they got a pretty good base of talent in a short period of time. It's just they haven't been playing, you know, because of injury. So what they really need, they're really not that they're a complete team, but they really need a wing player, a small forward. That's the position that's, assuming that Dunn can become the point guard. Levine's a, you know, legitimate NBA two. Markkanen's potentially an all-star four. And Carter's a little undersized, but, you know, can play at 5 and 4. And then you got some bench players, Portis and Valentine when he comes back next year, presumably. And so to me, it's a great, you know, you've got a lot of money, and it's a great opportunity for you know, an athletic kind of wing player who can handle the ball, that's the kind of thing that you had put that kind of player into that group. That's a pretty good team in the East. And so, you know, I don't know how free agents always think, but it'd certainly be, you know, a good situation. A young team that is a chance, that is the second youngest team in the league. So they do have a chance to, you know, make a move. It just looks bad because of the record and nobody's playing. So, you know, and you fire the coach, it looks like dysfunction, but, you know, they still should be well positioned going forward.
Yeah. And you mentioned Parker, and he has been playing well lately, but with Markkanen back, he's going to go to the bench. How's that going to play out?
Well, I'm interested to see that as well. It was pretty clear he didn't like coming off the bench to start the season. And then, you know, training camp, they sort of slotted him as, you know, so they want to kind of, because they needed a three, you know how it works in the NBA. Sometimes it's not what you can do, it's what we need. So we need a three. Maybe you can become a three, even though it's really not. And of course, Jabari's a really proud guy, so he said, well, I can play anywhere. So Markkanen gets hurt, and then they said, well, you know, we're going to play Portis at starting four because Jabari isn't really, you know, going to try him at three. And then Portis got hurt also. So then Jabari, you know, goes really, he really fits better, you know, that he has matchup advantages at four. He can step outside and shoot, but then he can beat you off the dribble. He's got some athletic talent, but he did not like coming off the bench. Now, you'd say, well, be a good team player and all, whatever. So I'm interested to see how he deals with it. He's starting the last, you know, with these guys injured, and he has improved a lot the last couple of weeks. First, initially, you could see he wasn't in great shape. He's not explosive. He never was an explosive kind of player anyway. But at the beginning of the season, he wasn't moving very well. But he's gotten in better shape, condition, and he has been the last couple of weeks. Scoring pretty easily, has games where he sees the floor well. He can take the ball off the backboard and, you know, start to break and pitch ahead and pass well. He's got a lot of skills. And so question is he going to buy into it? Who knows until we see. But I will say he did not like the idea of it earlier in the season. So. And Fred had to talk to him about it, and I thought Fred dealt with it well. Jabari said some things in the media that, you know, that he wasn't looking forward to it, didn't like the idea. Fred went back to him and said, look, this is it. This is what's going to happen. And, you know, and he seemed okay, but then everybody got hurt, so it really kind of became moot. So that's going to be an interesting question for Boylan. I actually want to add one thing right there, because people keep – and I saw it on TV a couple of times yesterday when Fred was fired. This is not the Jim Boylan. This is the second Jim Boylan that the Bulls have had as interim coaches. They're completely different people.
Sure, there was the Marquette guy.
Was the assistant to Scott Skiles, who became the interim coach in 2007-08, and has in the last couple of years been with the Cavs. On the bench, and this Jim Boylan has been is a career assistant. He was assistant under Rudy for 10 years. He was in San Antonio with Pop for a while, Indiana, under Vogel in Milwaukee, and he coached. The only head coaching job he had was at the University of Utah for four seasons. He spells last name B-O-Y-L-E-N. So they are two completely different people, but I noticed on both the NBA station on ESPN, they were both saying that he previously was the interim with the Bulls. So he's not. There's two Jim Boylans, and they spell their names differently. So your listeners know that.
Well, yes. Well, that, anybody who went to Marquette would know that. Anybody who follows the Cavs would know that because Jim Boylan filed a age discrimination lawsuit against the Cavs.
Not many
national
broadcasters seem to know that yesterday.
Well, fact-checking is not what it once was. It's sort of like the size of your newspaper, Sam, the one that you still get in your driveway. But let's take a look around the league, Sam. And I want to kind of just pick your brain about teams that are impressing the hell out of you. One for me is Denver. I watched the Nuggets and Raptors last night, and Denver's at the top of the Western Conference, tied with the Clippers right now at 16-7 as we tape here on December 4th. And Nikola Jokic is kind of becoming like my favorite player to watch because he's the only point center in the league. I mean, this guy can handle the ball, throws passes like crazy. He hit a three late in the game last night after he got fouled, and he almost got an end one on it. It was one of the craziest three-point shots you've ever seen. But the Nuggets have won six in a row to be atop the Western Conference. And then, you know, in the East, we knew Toronto was going to be good, but we didn't know they were going to be this good, 20-5. That's an 80% winning percentage. What's your take on just kind of the NBA now through 22, 24 games? Teams you love, teams you hate?
Well, I think one of the things in we're looking at before the season, and I think it's played out, you know, this notion was, you know, has been in recent years that you got to recede, that, you know, the East is like a, you know, expanded G League, and you know, the championship will be played out in the West, and I think as we saw going into the season, and even though most didn't have the Bucks quite there, and I had the Celtics instead, you know, the top teams in the East are every bit as competitive as the top teams in the West, especially since, you know, the Warriors. And we all know the Warriors will much improve, you know, once they get Draymond and everyone back and get things going later in the season. I saw this dynamic with the Bulls at the end of both three-peats. They struggled through those third years. This is like fourth for Golden State or whatever. It's really hard at the end of a run like that, not only to, you know, keep that intensity and that interest and effort, you know, each game, and they do a good job of it, but not to have those individual things, you know, rise up where everybody thinks the success is because of them. So that dynamic came up a lot with the Bulls in the 92-93 and then 97-98, both seasons in which they didn't lead the league and win, which they had in previous seasons when they won titles. So, you know, I think that's a factor, too, that's been interesting in that we sort of wondered about. I mean, the bottom of the East is obviously not very good because of the, well, Bulls, as we spoke about, Hawks, whatever, a couple of teams. But not as many teams, you know, are tanking on purpose like we had the last couple of years. You know, a lot of those teams have stabilized with young players. But to me, the really shocking teams in the West have been the Clippers. I expect them to fall back, you know, but it's a classic, like Doc Rivers, Orlando team when he first started coaching, that, you know, a bunch of players of similar abilities that he, you know, that he's able to mold into a team, you know, and so they, you know, they've been obviously a great surprise and you know, a great competitive team. We expected Denver to be good, even though they missed the playoffs. You know, I think they underachieved a little bit last year because of what they were putting together. I think also, you know, obviously we pay so much attention to the Lakers because of LeBron. I think they're doing a lot better than people expected, you know, because of it just shows, I mean, and I know we know he's great, but it just really, again, emphasizes just how uniquely impressive he is, that he can take any sort of erratic band of players and turn them into a successful team. That, and the Lakers are a tough out, you know, a tough team to play, and you know, still have a good shot at being a top four. And you know, in the East, to me, even though Toronto's had that record, I mean, they won like 60 games last year, and they added Kawhi Leonard, you know, a far better player than DeRozan. But the Bucks have been really the story to me. The way that not only Giannis has been great, but the way and that, I'm never are you as much as many a fan of the coaches making a huge difference. But Budenholzer is and personnel moves they made too. You know, getting a little more shooting, opening up the court for Giannis, speeding up the game. But Budenholzer's been the right guy there, and they become a real force. And also, you know, obviously Jimmy with the Sixers, and you know, Jimmy's been interesting. We know Jimmy really well from Chicago, and I could have predicted that Jimmy. You know, he's really a smart guy, and you know, he had his agenda in Minnesota, and however badly it looked, he got what he wanted, and he, now he's going to be exactly the right guy who they need. He's going to be a great teammate, playing it out, you know, with a good team. It's not about, you know, these young players or care more than those young players. It wasn't about that. That was a distraction. It was about getting in position to, you know, get his deal. And so he's doing a great job of that. And that team, you know, is really terrific to watch, a great competitive team. So, you know, it's not exactly parity, and NBA never has that, but it's, I think it's, you know, it's really much closer to that than we've seen.
Yeah, it's much more competitive than I think a lot of people expected, and certainly the injuries to the Clippers, the injuries to the Warriors have had an impact on that. Steph Curry was on pace to make about 400, 500 threes before he got hurt. Now he's back, and he hit five or six last night. You mentioned the Clippers. They're second in the NBA in scoring. Doc's doing a fantastic job. They're almost at 118. And then you mentioned the Bucks, who are leading the league in scoring with 121 points. But then when you start to look at the odds, Clippers are 60-1 to win the title. Nuggets are 40-1 to win the title. So 2-1 to win the title. The super favorite remains Golden State at less than even money, and then you got to look pretty hard to find the second choice, and the second choice is Toronto. They're just a little bit higher than 7-1. Can it really be that much of a foregone conclusion, with as strong as the Western Conference is, Sam, that Golden State's gonna knock off anybody they meet?
Well, we always. And that's the way sports works. We don't expect anyone else to win, because we believe the last thing we saw, and the last thing we've seen and we continue to see, is this, you know, Warriors team, which people now call the greatest ever. Some people, anyway.
I think you covered the greatest.
You know, until, you know, Tyson was never going to lose until he did. You know, and he was unbeatable, and Buster Douglas had no chance, and then he knocked him out. And so somebody's going to knock out the Warriors at some point, but you have to see it first. You know, we're not in sports. We're pretty good about telling you why it happened after it happened, not before it happened. So, but we saw Houston pretty close. You know, we saw Houston – you know, within a Chris Paul injury and knocking him out. And
sure, they're up 3-2.
Just because someone wins, you know, it's like and you can find many of those examples. You know, the 2012 Bulls were out in the first round when Derrick Rose had suffered his ACL, and then Joakim Noah, game after, went out with the rest of the series, and then they lose an 1-8 thing. But I was convinced and remain convinced that if Derek didn't get hurt, they would have won the title that year. They would beat Miami for sure. They would have dominated them all season. They had size. They were intimidated Miami. But they didn't. So notion if you bring that up. I said, well, you're nuts. You know, they were first round out. You know, that's what the record said. But so stuff happens. But until it happens, we don't know what happened. But what is, like I said, what has happened is there's been a leveling a lot as players have moved around. You know, even though fans moan about free agency, sometimes free agency has been great. You know, free agency, and even though some have, you know, criticized Durant, you know, it's fine. You know, it's great. You know, guys should have that ability to do that. It shouldn't be up to the team or the league to decide where people, you know, can practice their jobs. And so good for him, you know, good for all these guys. And free agency, even though it doesn't change the landscape that much, because basically it's just about, LeBron and Durant, you know, all that doesn't matter where the other free agents go. So, you know, Golden State was the last one to win. They have two or three all NBA players, and so they have the most talent. But as we've seen, you know, there's cracks when they're not at the highest level, you know, when they suffer some injuries. And the more you play later into seasons, like, you know, I saw that with the Bulls in the 90s too, and they would have fallen back if Jordan hadn't taken his vacations or whatever the circumstances were in baseball. Because they would have probably been beaten by somebody too. And so I think it'll happen with the Warriors, but until it does, you know, we say, well, you know, you got to knock out the champ, and, you know, until things change, and nobody's been able to do that yet.
Yeah, and, you know, you never know what the Lakers are going to look like going into the playoffs. What they look like now and what they look like on March 1st are probably going to be two different things. Tough to bet against a guy like LeBron, who's been to as many NBA finals, eight in a row, as he's been. Our guest today is Sam Smith, and I do want to mention to our listeners that Sam's got a book out. It's called Hard Labor. It's a book about the NBA in the 60s and the 70s, and some of the untold stories or stories that weren't told enough that people still deserve to hear. It's published by Triumph Books out of Chicago. You can get it on Amazon.com. Or again, the name of the book is Hard Labor. And Sam, just give me an anecdote or two from the book that you'd like people to hear.
It's an incredible book, and I'm not supposed to say that myself, and I'm not saying it because I wrote it. It's an incredible story of those guys, and it's basically comes out of the Robertson suit, which people have heard of, obviously, with Oscar Robertson and free agency. But, you know,
I'm going to interrupt you on that one because some people don't know that story. The story is that the NBA didn't have a players' union, and Oscar Robertson wanted one, and the players prior to the All-Star game said, we're not going to take the court unless you allow us to unionize. And this is in the locker room prior to the All-Star game. I'm not sure what city it was in, but the NBA caved right before tip-off, and they said, okay, we're going to let you have a union. And then the players took the court, and they played the All-Star game, but that was almost the All-Star game that didn't happen. But anyway, take it from there, Sam. We have young listeners.
Actually, I'll interrupt you. Yeah, I mean, since I actually have the and it's a great story, like I said. But actually, you know, people don't realize, because they know Kurt Flood and baseball was pretty good. The NBA really started all this. And actually, there was an NBA Players Association back as far as 1957, and Bob Cousy started and handed it off to Heinsohn, and then Oscar was the third president. And what happened, what you referred to, was a sort of a turning point. It was the 1964 All-Star Game. The players, they had this association, but the owners were ignoring them. And so they decided that the only way to get, and they'd literally gone to meetings on their own dime, flown across the country, and the owners literally would just not show up. You know, they'd be sitting there. I mean, you had the top players in the league, you know, Russell, Cousy, a lot of Celtics, obviously, in that era because they were successful, but Bob Pettit, all these guys. And they'd schedule meetings. The owners wouldn't come. And so they finally were driven to, you know, I said, well, you know what? The NBA was going to tell it. In 64 was the first All-Star game was going to be on TV, and the NBA had lost its TV contract. And so this was a big thing for the NBA. So the players say, okay, well, Larry Fleischer came in, and he was really the guiding point. You know, he was the Marvin Miller for basketball, and you know, really a supreme figure. So they agreed that they're going to boycott this All-Star game. And of course, the league's going nuts. Literally, the owner of the Lakers at the time, Bob Short, all the players gathered in Boston. The game was in Boston. And in one room, so you had both teams, and you had the Hall of Fame, essentially. You got Wilt, and you got Elgin, you got Jerry West, Oscar. It's just incredible. You know, if you go down the history of the NBA, the greatest players, they're essentially all in that same room. Bob Short is banging on the door, threatening Elgin Baylor and Jerry West, telling them they'll never play in the NBA again. Their careers are over. This was the hysteria going on. So finally, the owners make a concession about it was pension at the time. And there's, you can imagine how little the players were asking for. And it was some pension money, medical. I mean, you had incredible stories. You know, there's a story about, and I know you know it, about Maurice Stokes and Jack Twyman. And I tell that story in the book. It's the greatest teammate story in history. The league has the Twyman-Stokes story. And Stokes was LeBron James of his time, 6'8", 240, take the ball off one basket, you know, one backcourt, bring it full court. And that's really the story of why the Rochester Royals, who are now Sacramento, went through Cincinnati with Oscar, didn't draft Bill Russell. It was always said that the Celtic, you know, Red Auerbach tricked him. But they had the Stokes was better than Russell at the time. He was averaging like 20-20, and they needed a guard, you know. And so they, you know, they passed on Russell, obviously Russell. Okay, but if they had and you know, Wayne Embry would still tell, and Wayne, you know, was running into Sam Jones, and I had the great fortune to talk to so many of these guys during this, Sam Jones and West and Baylor and Earl Monroe and all the next story. So it's incredible stories what these guys went through, not only the labor but then the social revolution where they fought against. I mean, literally, Lenny Wilkins told me this story about when he was with the Hawks, you know, southern sort of state, St. Louis. He couldn't eat at the restaurant across the street from the arena with his teammates because he was black, and they didn't allow blacks in, even though they had a picture on the window of all the Hawks starters, including Lenny. So it's incredible stuff that these guys endured in an era where people were saying, well, you know, who was listening to the civil rights of NBA players and feeling sorry for them? And you know, none of these guys were making any money. John Havlicek told me the story. He was making $20,000 when he was basically MVP of the league, Celtics' best player, 6 championships. He went in and asked for a $5,000 raise from 20 to 25. Auerbach said he just assumed retire before he gives him $5,000. And Havlicek settled for $1,000 after being essentially the best player in the league. So it's an amazing story of what these guys went through, and the partnership too, the way they supported one another and stuck together. And like the Stokes story is a great example of that. And also it's little known about the Lakers plane crash, where he literally crashed into a field in Iowa, Elgin Baylor on the plane. Everybody escaped unharmed. So a really incredible stuff right up to the – and that really was the birth of the modern NBA. It wasn't Bird and Magic. It was these guys with this deal in 76 that led to the merger – created the merger, really. And then once the ABA came to the NBA, that brought the three-point shot, that brought the All-Star stuff, that brought, you know, David Thompson and Julius Erving and all these great high-flying players that changed the NBA from a very conservative league in the 70s. That's why the 70s is not very popular, to the, you know, the 80s that we got this greatest era. And the greatest era was thanks to what these guys did, you know, with that program and the merger and everything that accompanied it. So it's really an amazing story, background. And I know all NBA fans, you know, who don't hear much about what these guys did would really appreciate it.
The name of the book is Hard Labor. Again, you can buy it on Amazon.com. Make a nice Christmas present, whether you're a Bulls fan or you're just a basketball fan, because Sam's been covering the league and been covering it well for a long time. He's at Bulls.com now. And Sam, I want to turn it back to just the league in general and some of the odds that are up on most valuable player. And that gives me an opportunity to put in a plug. This show lives on GetMoreSports.com, but the guys paying the bills are BetDSI.com, or if you're listening overseas, it's BetDSI.eu. And if you go to BetDSI.com and you to make an initial deposit of up to $1,000 American, they'll match it. Just use the bonus code BBALL1000, all capital letters, BBALL1000, and they'll match your initial deposit, and then you get $1,000 of free money to go have some fun with. Make big bets, small bets, whatever strikes your fancy. But, Sam, right now I'm looking at the MVP odds, and Giannis is a heavy favorite right now, and he's followed by Anthony Davis, and then LeBron James is at 5-1. Kawhi right now is at 8-1. Steph Curry and Joel Embiid are a little lower than that. They're 7.5-1. Durant is at 12-1. And then you have some outliers. I mean, Carl Anthony Towns is 80-1. Kyrie Irving is 60-1 for a Celtics team that's probably not all that far from turning it around. Jimmy Butler is 90-1. Paul George is 70-1 for an Oklahoma City team that's, you know, right there, third in the West. If you had to say, hey, you know, Kyle Lowry's 250-1 for a very good Raptors team. If you had to say, and I always like to point to Nikola Jokic, who's not even on the board today. I'm sorry, he's on the board at 60-1. He was at 100-1 prior to the season, and David Griffin said, bet that. But if you had to pick a guy who's maybe a bit of an outlier that people are sleeping on in the MVP consideration, who would you pick?
Well, and it's hard, you name sort of everybody there. I don't know how you define the outlier, if it's not, one of the top three or four. And obviously, in NBA, the MVP is always a blend. Your team has to be, good. Obviously, it was a little different when Westbrook won a couple of years ago with a sixth-place team because he had the triple-double, the Oscar thing. You're looking at, obviously the team has to do well, and you have to do well statistically. And so, yeah, if like Charlotte was doing well, really well, then you could say, Kemba Walker has basically been a one-man team there with a team that has been, good, but is not going to be a top four team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's on the board, mentioned, 55 sort of on the edge. It's like Embiid to me. Embiid is, even though he's sort of a top contender, I don't know that many consider him top three. And to me, he makes this incredible difference. An interesting part to me, a couple of years ago, the NBA basically said, well, center's over. It took him off the All-Star ballot. And, remember, we used to vote for centers, and it got, sure. It got bad, like James Donaldson made it one year, stuff like that. But, there's a lot of really talented good big guys coming in the league now. Obviously the Ayton, top draft pick, and you guys got guys like Embiid. And so, he's a guy that, that's in Philly, I think it probably is going to, I still think they're going to be a top four in the East, top three, top four, whatever. So, that's the kind of guy that I think, is almost sort of an outlier because you got, the bigger names. He doesn't compare with some of the, Durant and Curry and LeBron and even Giannis, because he's like everybody's favorite now. And so that's what happens a lot. The early season guy, unless he gets, really goes into a slump, has a lot of momentum, like Harden last season and mm-hmm. whatever, Westbrook before that. And so, he's a guy, I look at, would you look at a Lillard, at Portland, like last year, because he plays with a good partner, they, maybe like, he doesn't get enough credit sometimes playing with McCollum.
He's 38-1.
That's
not a bad outlier. That's not a bad outlier pick. Lillard's on the board at 38-1. But like you said, he plays with CJ McCollum. So he plays in Portland. And Portland just doesn't get a lot of national media attention. But I'm sorry to interrupt you. Keep going, Sam.
No, that's okay. Yeah, I mentioned a guy like that. Those are the guys who don't get mentioned a lot who really have incredible impact on their teams. It's just their teams, don't look like they'll be top four teams.
Right. And, I've voted for MVP before, and I always like to say best player on the best team. Give me a reason to not vote for him. And if I could find a compelling reason to not vote for him, then I wouldn't vote for him. But generally, that's where I started. Who's the best player on the best team? And like right now, if let's say form holds and Toronto's the best team, well, Kawhi's missing back-to-backs, and we're not sure if Kawhi's going to be in there past the trade deadline. That remains to be seen. But if Denver holds up, Nikola Jokic, again, to go back to this guy, I can't believe what a freak this guy is. You talk about centers being being back, and like Embiid, Jokic can play outside. But unlike Embiid, Jokic can handle the ball. He can handle the ball like a point guard. He's one of the best passers in the league. He had his triple-double last night, and he had the assists real early. He got the rebounds late to get to the triple-double. What are your thoughts on that kid, the young man from Serbia? The Joker, as they call him.
Yeah, he's a talented guy. I don't think he stands any chance to be an MVP. For one reason, because Denver, has a kind of team that where they have a lot of guys contribute. And on different nights, you have different guys as leading scorers. And like you say, he's a facilitator also. But it does matter, and especially because it's a media vote. One thing's playing in Denver, obviously, where you don't get on TV a lot. But the other thing is he doesn't have any highlights. You'll hardly ever see, there's never a highlight of something Jokic has done, because he's clever, he'll make a lot of, good passes and take an opportunity shot. But he's not an explosive player. He's a little slow, actually. And so he doesn't, and that's you wouldn't say that's a fair judge. And like even if Denver had, ended up with the best record in the Western Conference, I don't think he would even be a top five in the MVP voting, because he's not you don't see him on TV. And the truth is, a lot of voters don't go to that many games. So they don't think of him a lot. They're gonna you see Giannis doing incredible things, and you obviously see all the Warriors on TV. You see LeBron, Westbrook, getting triple doubles and all that stuff, which were spectacular triple doubles because of the dunking and the histrionics, and because he's just out there kind of playing. And so, like I said, I don't. Despite his abilities, I don't think he'll ever be a top five MVP guy. I could be wrong about that, but those kind of things, the sort of media perception enters into it, and there's so many more sort of exciting stars. Like even a guy, the Detroit Pistons have been a big surprise, and Blake Griffin has sort of resurrected himself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Talking about outliers, that might be an outlier kind of guy, because people kind of wrote him off in the last couple of years. And he's come on, he's come on in a big way, and the team has done pretty well. I don't expect him to sustain it, but they've done pretty well.
Sure, because he's going to get hurt, right? If history holds.
Well, enough to wrap on him. But I don't think guys get over that, as we've seen with Derrick Rose. Hopefully Derrick stays in good shape. But, and also if you watch, in play, Bulls have played the Pistons a few times, and so I've seen him. I've watched him a lot, and he plays differently. He's not, and like Derek, like Derek has done is too. He's playing more in control. He's handling the ball, making plays, and it's interesting. He plays lower. Everything was always up in the air, obviously, with him, with the dunking, and all the stuff that he did. And now you see, and he's got an interesting handle where he gets down, and so he protects the ball, and his moves are much more controlled. And he's developed a really good shot. He's a reliable mid-range, and he's got a nice three-point touch. And so he's really expanded his game a lot, and still got some, he's got the athletic ability where he can drive by you. So, he's refashioned himself into a really interesting player.
Yeah, he's actually averaging more three-point attempts per game than – he's at 6.2. LeBron's at 5.8. Kevin Durant's at 4.5. So Blake Griffin's shooting a ton of threes, and he's playing point forward. There's not many guys in the league that are shooting as many threes as he is. He's only hit him at a 36% clip, which is not in the Steph Curry range, but still he's added it to his game. And when they do use him as point forward, and they were doing that earlier, they're doing a little less now with Reggie Jackson playing bigger minutes. But they can pose big matchup problems for for, you know, different teams. And if they do make the playoffs, let's see who they match up against. And Blake's ability to play as the point forward is certainly going to impact it. But there's a lot of season left, but there's not a lot of time left in this show, so I'm going to start to wrap it. Our guest has been Sam Smith. You can follow him on Twitter. He's at Sam Smith Hoops. He was with the Chicago Tribune from 1979 to 2008, and then he's been with Bulls.com ever since. And the Bulls don't have anything to say about what he writes on their site. He's got editorial freedom. Not a lot of team sites have that. You know, I'm going to go see the Oklahoma City Thunder tomorrow night in Brooklyn, and Sam Presti likes to read everything that the in-house writer writes before they put it out on Thunder.com. But Sam does have editorial freedom, and anything you see on Bulls.com is not going to be tainted by the Bulls front office. So, and that's important to know. I'm Sheridan Hoops on Twitter. I'm still carrying that one from the days of my website. You can follow me as well. And again, this show lives on GetMoreSports.com, but it's sponsored by BetDSI.com. And go there, use bonus code BBALL1000, all capital letters. And again, if you're overseas, go to BetDSI.eu, and they'll match up to $1,000. And you go have some fun with it. Go bet the Pacers tonight. They're given 7, and they'll probably win by 74. But Sam, I want to wrap it up. And just again, one more time, plug your book. It's called Hard Labor. It's on Amazon.com. Make a nice Christmas gift for anybody you know who likes basketball. And again, you don't have to be a Bulls fan, just a fan of the game. There's a lot of stories in there that a lot of the younger generation needs to hear, needs to read about, because this league's been around a lot longer than a lot of the younger folks realize. And there's stories about how hard some of the greater players had it over the years that deserve to be known, and then they get passed along, and you know, younger listeners can pass that book along to their kids when they eventually have them, and then they have to worry about tuition bills like I do. So, Sam, again, thanks for joining us on the show, and have a good time tonight in Indiana. What's your pick for the game? 7-point spread.
Well, I'll be a homer on this one and give Jim Boylan his first win so we can get that over with. But good luck
money
to him, because they're still missing a lot of players.
Yeah, money line pick. And they're playing a tough team in an underrated Indiana Pacers team that also doesn't get a lot of national exposure but is better than people realize. So, Sam, thanks again for coming on. And we'll be back at you again, folks, if not this week, then next week. And with that, we're just going to go over and out.